The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lynn Ormoudou, and welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says each year about 1.5 million children die from diseases like measles, pneumonia, and rubella. These diseases and others are preventable with a simple shot or a few drops. Over the years, vaccines have helped children become healthy adults and adults protect themselves against some diseases at home or while traveling. This week is World Immunization Week and Africa Vaccination Week, so we will take a closer look at immunization. And joining us via phone from Washington, D.C. is Robert Steinglass, USAID's Immunization Director for the Maternal and Child Health Integrated Program, MCHIP. Mr. Steinglass, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Also joining us via phone from Accra, Ghana is Dr. George Armour. He's a professor, associate professor with the University of Ghana. Dr. Armour, welcome to the program. Mr. Armour.
Thank you very much.
Okay, good. Thank you for joining us. And let me remind the listeners, if you would like to participate in the show with your question or comment, call 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. You can ask your international operator to reverse the charges. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com and post them on Facebook.com/healthchat. And we will discuss immunization in a moment with our guest. But first, Lisa Schlein has this report.
Gavi says it is reaching record numbers of children with life-saving vaccines. It says more countries than ever are introducing new vaccines, averting many deaths and improving the health and well-being of millions of people. Pneumonia and diarrhea are the two biggest child killers in the world. The price of the pneumococcal and rotavirus vaccines, which protect against these illnesses, has gone down dramatically, making them affordable for children in developing countries. Gavi introduced pentavalent vaccines in 2001 with the aim of reaching all 73 Gavi-eligible countries by 2014. These vaccines offer protection against five diseases: diphtheria, tetanus pertussis, hepatitis, and Haemophilus influenza type B. Gavi Chief Executive Officer Seth Berkley says the widespread use of these vaccines in the poorer countries is an essential step towards achieving the Millennium Development Goal of reducing the under-5 mortality rate by two-thirds by 2015. He says pentavalent vaccines now are available in 72 of the 73 Gavi countries.
The last country which will have this vaccine rolled out is Southern Sudan, which will be rolled out in first quarter of next year. And of course, Southern Sudan was not a country when Gavi began the rollout of this vaccine. So this vaccine now is becoming the normal vaccine in the world. And that is, for us, a big deal.
Despite these successes, Dr. Berkley says challenges remain in a number of fragile countries. For example, he tells VOA, some 22 million children are not being fully immunized against diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus. The largest number is in India, followed by Nigeria and Ethiopia. In these fragile countries, he says it is important to improve the reliability of supply chains, improve in-country data collection, and adopt tailored approaches toward immunization.
So instead of having the same mechanism for every country, we work with different countries in different ways. So Afghanistan, for example, has made a decision that it would use non-governmental organizations to do most of its distribution. So the government then contracts out the work that Gavi does and the supply of vaccines. But our goal at the end is to try to work with each country and help them. During the recent disturbances in Mali, for example, we worked very hard to make sure that vaccines kept going during that period. And we're able to do that.
Dr. Berkley says vaccines are widely recognized as one of the most cost-effective public health tools, providing the best possible protection against vaccine-preventable diseases. He says that means every child must have access to all 11 of the vaccines the World Health Organization recommends. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Again, Dr. Amar and Mr. Steinglass, thank you for both for joining us. Let me start with you, Mr. Steinglass. We heard in the report there, obviously, Lisa Schlein was speaking to Seth Berkley of Gavi Alliance. Now, one of the things that was mentioned was the fact that pneumonia and diarrhea are responsible for a major mortality among children age under five. So tell us about the impact of these two diseases in the developed world. Is this true for the developed world?
Well, in the developed world, as most parents will know, you know, their kids suffer from respiratory infections, diarrhea infections, allergies, etc. So the diseases, of course, are very important in the developed world as well. But, of course, the consequences of the diseases are very different than in the developing world.
So tell us about those, some of those consequences.
Well, in the developing world, the poorest people are particularly vulnerable. When they get diarrhea, when they get pneumonia, oftentimes they have less ability to access medical care in the first place. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes they're living in remote areas where the medical care doesn't exist. Sometimes they're living even in inaccessible areas, but in urban slums where it's difficult for a mother who's poor to drop what she's doing and take the child to the health facility. So the consequences of getting these infections is greater. And on top of that, the nutritional status of the kids is usually not as good as in the developed world. So the diseases themselves can be more serious if they contract them.
Okay. Dr. Arma, in Ghana in 2012, on April 26, the country rolled out pneumococcal and rotavirus vaccines, and I happened to take part of this launch a couple of years ago. What can you tell us today, 2 years after the implementation, what type of impact have you seen?
Well, there has been a big impact. As my colleague just said, the three major causes of morbidity in attendance at the hospital are pneumococcal diseases, respiratory infections, diarrheal diseases, and malaria. And there's been a huge reduction in the hospitalization due to diarrhea generally in all the hospitals. We've seen close to 40 to 50% reduction, especially in the very vulnerable group, that is the children under 1 year of age. We're carrying out a study now, and I'm sure probably next year we will see whether this has also had an effect on the older children who were not vaccinated. But yes, certainly there has been a huge impact on hospital attendance and mortality in Ghana.
So, in a general sense, what type of vaccines are recommended in the routine immunization for children? I believe it was about 9 before they introduced the two other vaccines. Are you up to 11 now? Am I correct?
Are you addressing
Dr. Arma in Ghana? In Ghana specifically,
the rotavirus and then the pneumococcal vaccine.
Okay. And Mr. Steinglass, now, in general, for children, what type of vaccines are recommended? I know you've worked extensively in Africa. Can you tell us about the vaccines that are perhaps common from one country to another that WHO recommends for children?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the vaccinations that are used in Africa are, for the most part, very similar to the vaccinations that are used in the United States and in other industrialized countries. The children start early in life with a vaccine against tuberculosis. The vaccine is called BCG. Mm-hmm. They also then start a series of vaccinations against polio and against the five diseases that are now incorporated into a single vaccine to protect against those diseases, and those are diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, hepatitis B, and Haemophilus influenza type B, as your earlier report referred to. So that's a single injection that's given against all five of those diseases, but a child needs it three times in their first year of life. In addition, they receive measles vaccine, typically at 9 months of age. Some countries are starting to consider introducing the German measles or rubella vaccine as well. And then, as your piece mentioned, a rotavirus and pneumococcal vaccine are also being introduced in most countries progressively throughout Africa. And then there are some sort of localized vaccines that are important in certain areas of Africa. For example, there's a new vaccine against meningococcal A disease, and that's also being introduced. And then there's yellow fever in some parts of Africa, which is also used. So there's a sort of a generic base of vaccines that are required and used in almost all countries. And then there are some regionally relevant vaccines as well.
Now, Dr. Arma, in Ghana, Mr. Steinglass listed all these vaccines, and I'm sure most of them, if not all of them, are part of the routine immunization. How is it in terms of access to these vaccines for parents? Are these administered free of charge, or is it something that parents have to pay, or does it depend on the type of vaccine?
They are free of charge. They are part of the the National Responded Program Immunization Schedule, and they are all free of charge.
Okay.
Nobody pays for it.
Okay. Yeah. And Mr. Steinglass, have you seen that with other countries that you work that the routine vaccination was free of charge?
Yes, because it's such an important thing to immunize countries' population, that almost all ministries of health have a system of offering it free of charge. Some parents may choose to get their vaccinations through the private fee-for-service system, but for the most part, any child is also eligible to receive those vaccines freely through public clinics.
I know some of the concerns that I've come across as I spoke to people that were involved in vaccination, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. They talked about some of the challenges, sometimes access to even those vaccines. Perhaps they run out, some health centers run out of the supply. Sometimes it's even to keep those vaccine in an adequate, the adequate temperature and everything. It's very, very tough. Dr. Arma, what can you tell us in terms of the challenges that some of the common challenges that you see in the Ghanaian setting?
I think the cold chain, trying to control the cold chain, has been very good success and has been done very well. And even in the very hard to reach areas, they have solar refrigerators kept at the appropriate temperatures, and that is where most of the vaccines are kept. And the other issue is that they don't keep too many vaccines at the site. And so there's a system of good replenishment of accounted for vaccines. And so there hasn't been too much losses in terms of that. We have also taken the vaccination program closer to the doorsteps of the hard-to-reach people, mm-hmm. Through the district health organizations, through the other NGOs that also get around them with them. And so it's been very, very close. We haven't had too many challenges. I mean, the only challenge that we faced was that Ghana went in for the two-dose vaccine. And, of course, the EPI has a three-dose schedule for most of the other vaccines, 6 weeks and 14 weeks. And also that created an initial challenge, but I think there's been a lot of good education, and then it's going on very well now.
Okay. And Mr. Steinglass, have you seen some safety concerns for immunization projects in developing areas? Sometimes we've heard of reports where some health workers have been perhaps killed. It doesn't happen very often, but it did happen in a few cases. When you work on the ground, are people that are going out there to vaccinate children, go to remote areas, are they concerned about safety? And is it rightfully so?
Well, in my experience, there are no safety issues that the health workers are facing. Some of the safety issues that one hears about in the press relate to certain regions of the world where polio continues to persist, and the response of the international community is doing lots of mass campaigns against polio, which is necessary to complete the eradication of polio. That usually entails sending vaccinators out, oftentimes door to door, which is puzzling in many areas to the people as to why these health workers keep coming again and again and again. And there have been some rumors that have been spread, oftentimes by mischievous political groups, about the real supposedly intended reasons for all of this vaccination. But the vaccination is to control disease. But people will sometimes spread rumors, and that has sometimes led to safety issues. But for the routine program, these are vaccines that the people all demand, they want. They want a good quality, reliable service provided by the government. And when that service is predictable, reliable, of relatively good quality, people will come again and again and complete their vaccination. So safety really isn't an issue for health workers in general, but it has come up for sure in some parts of the world where polio continues to persist.
So you from what you are saying, if I understand correctly, you mentioned the rumors and is it specifically around the polio vaccination campaign, or do you come across sometimes some misconceptions where some communities are resistant to some other types of vaccination?
Right. Well, it's true that there are in some countries in Africa, there are oftentimes some groups that have strong views about vaccination, but that's really relatively uncommon. For the most part, as I said, people fear these diseases and they value the vaccines and they are prepared to come and get vaccination as long as the service that's provided is relatively convenient. If it's extremely inconvenient, of course, that presents barriers to people to come and utilize the service. But if the service is offered predictably, if the health workers are, you know, deliver services and are respectful and affable, people will be happy to receive the service and come back and complete their service, their series.
Okay, Dr. Arma, would you comment? Would you please comment on that? Have you come across some communities in Ghana maybe that are not so well informed on vaccines and perhaps had some resistance? Dr. Arma, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I didn't get you.
Yeah, I was wondering if in the case of Ghana. Yes, I was wondering if in the case of Ghana you have experienced some cases where some communities were a little bit resistant to vaccination, be it with polio or other diseases.
No, we haven't had that. Actually, there has been a very good backing from the population itself. And mothers are very, very anxious to get all their vaccines for their children. The other issue that we have seen a gradual increase in the use of daycare centers for children from all groups, both working mothers and those who also stay at home. And one of the requirements for these daycare centers, or admittance of children to daycare centers, is that if you have a vaccination history.
Okay.
And so having a vaccination card with all the vaccines gives you, you know, a good chance of being admitted to these daycare centers. And so there's been a good buy-in, and that has also helped push up the coverage rate.
I was also impressed, I have to admit, when I was in Ghana for the rollout of the two vaccines, to see the way the community came together to inform and educate.
Yeah.
They used the gongon beating, the community leaders. I guess there was also a very cultural approach to this sensitization. And I think that perhaps it's also a way that helps, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's exactly what helped. I mean, there was a good sensitization, but people bought it and they didn't see it as something foreign.
Mm-hmm.
They saw it as something that would improve the health of their children. And so they bought it. There hasn't been any issue.
Okay. Now, Mr. Steingleis, when you look at the big picture in terms of immunization in general, from what we see, there seems to have some progress globally where more and more children are being vaccinated. But what can you tell us in terms of, and we're going to switch gears just a little bit to talk about vaccination for adults. What can you tell us about that? Do we put too much emphasis on children, and we don't? We need more education with some vaccinations that adults need, whether they're traveling or just in their routine health screening. What can you tell us?
Well, over the past few years, the global community has come together and has put out and agreed upon what they call global global vaccine action plan for this decade up until the year 2020. And one of the interesting innovations in that plan is that there is now recognition that there is a need to expand the focus of immunization programs beyond only children. I say only children, but of course children represent probably the most important group to reach, because you want to reach children early in life in a timely way before they're exposed to disease. Mm-hmm. However, there's recognition that immunization is a lifelong or should be a lifelong goal. We have these great vaccines. We want to make sure that people are protected against various diseases throughout their life. So, for example, there's a vaccine against cervical cancer now, human papilloma virus vaccine, which Gavi is starting to explore how to introduce into various countries through demonstration projects. There's also the need, and that's targeting adolescents, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Similarly, tetanus is a disease that can affect anybody at any age in life. So adults and adolescents need to make sure that their tetanus vaccination is up to date. And then similarly, there are other boosters that can be given throughout life. So it's important that people check to make sure that they're up to date, speak to their health workers and their family practitioners to make sure that they are up to date on their vaccination.
Now, when we look at a vaccine like one against rabies, is it something that everyone should get, or it depends on where you live? Because some of these vaccines they recommend for adults, we may not necessarily feel like we need it. But then when you are confronted with a problem, that's when you realize that, okay, this is something that one should have done.
Right.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, obviously it's important for people to take whatever preventive means that they can. Some of the vaccines are still quite expensive. Gavi has done a great job of lowering the price of vaccines, so they are now affordable and to many countries, and that countries no longer have to wait decades before they can introduce vaccines that are being introduced in industrialized countries. But nevertheless, there are still some vaccines that are quite expensive, and you mentioned rabies, and that tends to be quite an expensive vaccine to take as a preventative. So some countries can't really afford yet to introduce all of these vaccines. So whatever vaccines the government has already started to introduce in that country, people should make sure that they take full advantage of those that are available.
Now, let's talk about the BCG vaccine against TB. It has been said in the past that this vaccine needs to be improved, updated. It seems to be a bit outdated. What can you tell us about that? I know that it's a very old vaccine. Is it up to date for today's requirements, through today's health requirements? When we think about XDR TB that can occur later in life, when we think about everything that is happening today, is the BCG vaccine still effective?
Right. Well, the BCG vaccine, of course, is given as soon as a child is born, and it's extremely effective against the very dangerous forms of tuberculosis that can affect children. So it's good against disseminated tuberculosis, miliary tuberculosis, tuberculosis that affects bones, brains, et cetera, et cetera. Against pulmonary tuberculosis, its effectiveness is not as good as we would like. So yes, it's important that people take that vaccine, because it will be it will have high efficacy for some people. But the international community is working all the time to try to improve that particular vaccine.
Okay. Dr. Arma, let's talk about the Ghanaian context when it comes to vaccines that really some people hope that can be developed. Let's look at malaria, for example. What do you think in terms of the needs that Africa has today with regards to new vaccines? Where should the priorities be? Obviously, malaria is one of the biggest killers on the continent. Let me have your thought on that.
Yes, I think malaria is an important disease for us. it is one of the biggest killers. And so, yes, there should be efforts applying to develop a vaccine for malaria, and it will be very, very well accepted. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is with the cervical cancer vaccine that is being promoted now. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we have looked at the vaccine only as against cervical cancer, but actually it's against HPV. And we have genital warts also as a problem here. These are some of the STDs that are not really talked about, all right? But this is an issue. And if we try to promote the HPV vaccine as against the cervical cancer, the perception here now is that it is a vaccine for women and not for men. We have huge problems if we want to promote it as one of the adolescent vaccines for both men and women. So those are some of the issues that are also going on. We need to look at the cultural, situations or what people understand and try to market these vaccines. I seriously have a view that we have problems when we want to look at it now as against genital warts and the adults.
But how accessible is the HPV vaccine in Ghana presently?
Well, it's now in the private market and it's also being promoted by Gavi and then a few NGOs. The ultimate would be that it would be probably become policy to be included in the routine vaccines that are recommended for people. But as to whether we get the 89% to 90% on what is called coverage, as we have for the other vaccines, I'm not too sure about it.
Mm-hmm. But you know, when the HPV vaccine first came out, and if I'm wrong, please correct me, it was promoted and it's still promoted as a vaccine for young girls to prevent from cervical cancer. And then later on, we found out that boys can also be vaccinated with that vaccine. And Mr. Steinglass, maybe you can comment on that. So what is the status now? What is the case now as of today? Are we promoting it strongly with boys, young boys, or is it still in like a trial phase?
I think even in the industrialized world, there isn't a consensus yet in the public health community as to exactly the best way to approach it. There are lots of factors that are involved in the decision to introduce a vaccine or not. One, of course, is the epidemiology of the disease, but there's also issues about the organization of health services to deliver effectively those vaccines, as well as the cost of the vaccine. So in an ideal world, you know, everyone should be vaccinated practically against everything. But unfortunately, in the world of public health, we generally don't have enough resources to be able to do what is ideal, and we have to make good with what we have. So the most important group to focus on initially in any event would be girls before they enter their reproductive ages.
You know, very quickly, we're running out of time, and Dr. Amar, I wanted you to perhaps comment on that. With the HPV vaccine, I've come across mothers, African mothers, who said, this is a way of encouraging my daughter to be sexually active. Do you see this reaction from mothers? Do you think there is a cultural reaction to that, or is it something that maybe you haven't seen in Ghana?
There is a cultural reaction to that. That is a perception, not only with mothers, but it's also from some fathers, that it's a way of promoting promiscuity. But as my colleague already said, I think we need to spend a little bit more effort and money on also trying to map out the epidemiology of the disease. Mm-hmm. Right, in African countries. What really helped the rotavirus vaccine was the good epidemiology data that we had. And that was able to convince the policymakers, convince the people themselves that there's a need for it.
Okay.
And I'm afraid we don't have that for the HPV. Yes, we need to do that.
So it is work in progress. Dr. George Arma, thank you so much with the University of Ghana. Thank you for joining us today. And Mr. Robert Steinglass, USAID Humanization Director for the MCHIP program, I thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And a reminder that you can join us on facebook.com/healthchat and let's keep the conversation going. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with your producer, Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.